Beauty and physical perfection has become crucial to so many. But what happens when you try to reach that impossible goal of perfection? Author Bree Lee, in her new beauty book, Beauty, shares her struggle in trying to attain that perfection and explores society's increasing obsession with body image. I spoke with Bree to discuss these unattainable ideals.
I am someone who is just sort of naturally inclined to diarize. Not even naturally, like it is a choice I make and try to make time for, that when I experience something that is either great and awesome or really upsetting or challenging or just I feel I don't yet understand, I do try to take the time to stop and make notes about it, because I think that's just, I mean, it just really helps me live in the world, and then often becomes really important to projects that I decide to put in an actual kind of readable format later down the track. But certainly with beauty in particular, it was, to my mind, it was always going to be a kind of an investigation almost. And so to that extent, I was still living through these sort of tough experiences while I had started doing the reading and research into these themes. So then very much, I'd say like the second half of the book, I was still living this life where I was struggling with these things or coming out the other end of struggling with these things and also thinking about how that would turn into this piece of writing that reflected on all these incredible other authors and researchers who I'd been consuming for the past 6 months.
Is that your natural response to trying to resolve something that you're going through in terms of, like, do the research, find out the why?
Yeah, for me, a huge thing that was helpful both with Eggshell Skull, my first book, and now Beauty, is something I just sort of shorthand call, like, finding the language for things. Because for me, a lot of the things that in my life have caused me pain or anxiety are issues that were kind of murky and hidden and somehow unclear to me, either because, you know, broader society doesn't talk about these things, because I had never sat down and given myself the space to actually confront and consider these things. And yeah, for me, a huge part of the sort of process to understanding and therefore potentially healing is just being able to look a problem in the face and find the right names to call it, essentially. And really researching and writing Beauty has given me this framework and this language to be able to unlearn the sort of crap about my body that I've just incidentally ingested in the first 25 years of life, 27 years of life, I think.
It's quite confronting reading through the concepts that you uncover, things like the concept between if you're not striving towards something, and in this case it was thinness as the next layer of achievement, then the antithesis to that is laziness, you know, instead of satisfaction, I guess.
Mm.
And the concept that there's a connection between beauty and thinness and then intelligence and what's good. These dichotomies are quite scary, really, when you step back and consider how pervasive they are, aren't they?
Absolutely, definitely. And the more time I spent with these concepts, the more I realized that the way I wanted to treat other people, which is, you know, on the premise that every single person is equal and deserving of worth and respect to each other, obviously, that there is so much about the way we talk about bodies, and we talk about women's bodies in particular, fat bodies in particular, et cetera. It's so loaded. It's so much about class. It's so much about all of these different intersections of identity. One of the hardest things for me about researching and writing Beauty was trying to be honest with myself about how I had become complicit in some of these systems that I said and do really hate.
The first half of the book, you outline the trajectory you took towards a photo shoot, which was a part of doing the rounds in terms of your first book, Eggshell Skull. Can you tell me about that experience?
I decided to use that as one of the sort of I suppose for want of a better term, like narrative through lines, because it really was a big deal to me at that time. There was some sense I had of these worlds colliding. Like on an intellectual level, we all know that like supermodels or just kind of these celebrities and super rich people, the sort of beautiful jet set, whatever, you know, that those people have tons of money and private chefs and personal trainers, and they are employed to look that way. And then they have their photos taken and the photos are altered. And so the photos we see in magazines are not even the reality of what those already very gifted people experience and look like. But for me, when I was invited to be in a photo shoot for one of those, you know, glossy women's magazines, suddenly I realized that I was going to be in the same pages as those people. And so all of a sudden it was not like I couldn't, it was as though I couldn't keep thinking of these people as different or other to me, because now I was going to be on the pages beside them. And there's something there that I think is also analogous to smartphones and social media, where we have this blending of worlds, and more now than ever before, the average person with the average person's daily life struggles, financial situation, geography, level of physical ability, all of that, those people are able to compare themselves to the super mega rich, genetically gifted people much more easily than ever before. And I was really working myself up into quite a state in the lead up to this, photo shoot. And there are, the book goes into the other, I suppose, factors that made me stressed and anxious at that time in my life. The book tour going around was very, obviously, huge privilege, and I'm very grateful, but also quite a uniquely stressful time, constantly reliving that trauma, feeling like I was being constantly sort of photographed and trying to do advocacy and putting my best, most sort of polished foot forwards for all that stuff. But then the stuff that happened once the photo came out and I saw myself in that context and I saw the way my image was being used, I realized that if I wasn't careful, I would become a face that was used to sell things instead of what had been happening until then, which was being sold to. And that's that kind of complicity that I really struggled with, where I think a lot of people perpetuate these damaging ideas to each other in ways that we should be more willing to hold ourselves accountable for.
It's a massive confrontation, isn't it, when you are stuck in the center of something, kind of straddling those two worlds and going, hang on, what am I really thinking here and what am I standing for?
Absolutely. And I think there is a connection here to the fact that the type of really common, widespread feminism we're seeing at the moment is often very, just very easily slips into this really white, corporate, well-off idea of feminism. And I know that particularly in the last year, I've had to be really conscious of trying to not kind of accidentally fall into that identity, say yes to those types of jobs and yes to those types of opportunities, because they're very well paid and you can still sort of celebrate yourself and celebrate the appearance that you're doing the right thing. But I subscribe to that age-old idea that if your radical new ideas don't help poor, then they're not terribly new nor radical. So, yeah, I just think a lot of the problems we have and the way we think and talk about beauty are very connected to class and money in Australia.
Absolutely. And the depth that you went into that concept that beauty and thinness was connected to what's intelligent, you know, and that a person doesn't get a seat at the table unless they fit the cookie cutter version, ticked out of the way first.
Driving, yep, all of that stuff. Like the way fat shaming operates, so that people will see someone who is fat and just decide that that person must have all of these sort of more universal qualities, like a laziness or a lack of self-control, and then presume that those qualities also affect that person's other areas of their personality, like, you know, work ethic and intelligence. That happens every day. It's awful. And it's just so insidious. I really, like going back to one of your earlier questions, I really think being able to name that behavior and find language to describe how bad those thought processes are is a really critical first step.
Heading into that book tour and the unique pressures that did put upon you, and it got realised in many ways, and one was the eating disorder you experienced at the time. How have you steadied yourself going into the release of beauty? Obviously, you've sat there and thought about this issue really deeply, but do you have support networks that you engage and things like that to make sure that you are held up and looking after yourself going through this process again?
Yeah, definitely. I will say, just to clarify, that I personally have never been diagnosed with an eating disorder, because I think it's an interesting and important point to clarify that, like more Australians, I have gone through significant portions of my life with disordered eating habits, even though I've never been diagnosed with an eating disorder. And that is a important distinction to make, I suppose, because so many people have suffer from and struggle with disordered eating that, you know, robs them of so many hours of joy in their lives, and it's not taken seriously just because they might never be officially diagnosed. And that's what I was really interested in exploring in beauty. But to answer your question properly, I suppose I actually just had to do a reading from an early part of beauty for the first time last night, and I feel that the person I documented in that book, I have already just so significantly moved on from. Honestly, the process, again, of researching and writing beauty, I won't say cured, because healing from things like this is never the sort of before and after image that we are sold. But certainly I just have a much stronger sense of self and am really confident that I will never struggle with these problems the way I previously did, because now, without being too sort of conspiracy theorist about it all, I just now see so clearly who makes money from me feeling like crap, and I'm not interested in that anymore. And the other thing that helps always when I get asked any questions about self-care again is just that self-care is significantly easier when you are not broke. And so for me, someone in my position, downtime, ordering in takeaway Thai food, yeah, I just sort of have a good support network and mechanisms in place, and I'm confident that it won't get that dark again.
So those things are accessible to you as a successful woman who's got an income.
What? No kids, no mortgage.
Yeah.
Like, really, on the scheme of things, self-care for someone like me is pretty easy.
But then we're talking about those class factors that you've reflected on. There are many who can't access that and who are trying to kind of meet this unattainable sort of level of what they believe society is looking for. Do you have advice for people in that situation? Do you have something that you would impart to them that kind of you hope would help?
I guess all I can say is what I know really helped me was just constantly reminding myself that if I wouldn't speak a certain way to somebody else, that I shouldn't speak that way to myself. And that I don't think, like, philosophically it's possible to have a completely different set of values and criteria for yourselves as you do for other human beings. Well, certainly that we shouldn't, either in sort of good ways or bad ways. I've seen already, you know, something that happened with my first book, Eggshell Skull, which was that, you know, lots of people wrote to me or said to me how much reading that book really helped them and changed the way they thought about things or did things in their lives. And some people have started saying that to me with regards to beauty. And I do have faith that change on that person-to-person level is not only hugely important in it and of itself, but it is the first step, a critical step to bigger change.
The conversations have to be had, and the investigation. Why does this matter? Why are these things impacting me? Why am I seeing this? You know, and put that gaze on the way we see the world a little bit more and release ourselves from those expectations.
Yeah, and the really frustrating thing, and, you know, something I reflected a lot on in beauty, was that it's coming up to the 30th anniversary of Naomi Wolf's book, The Beauty Myth, which, you know, when it came out was this sort of watershed, like, call to action against damaging beauty standards. And when Naomi Wolf wrote that, it was in a time and place where it was much easier for her to point upwards to magazines and advertising as being the source of these problems. You know, and that book allowed space for really important conversations to be had. In many ways, even though now we all have the power to set the rules for ourselves, with the advent of social media and smartphones and the internet, in many ways we're doing it to each other worse than the companies were doing it to us 30 years ago. Or certainly it's a combination of the two. And so I know when I started thinking about whether or not I wanted to turn beauty into an actual book, I kept sort of pausing and restarting and pausing and restarting because I worried that this was such trodden ground. But really, I think as technology and society develops, the conversation is slightly different and needs to be rehad and rehad. Otherwise, we just sort of slip back into bad old habits.
Bree Lee speaking to me there about her new book, Beauty.